Holy smokes!
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley with the biggest stories of the day. It's the Big Three at Three. Number one.
All right, a little programming note. Remember, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour on a Texans Ticket Tuesday, you'll have a chance to win tickets to Sunday's game against the Jags. So you got to be listening in the 5 o'clock hour. Also, and Tyler, I want to make sure I'm getting this right. The pitch in Edo, is that where we are tomorrow? The pitch in Edo?
Pitch 25, my friend.
Damn, sorry. Pitch 25. Pitch 25 in Edo. We'll be out there tomorrow from 2 to 6, so come hang out with us. A little Astros Day baseball at the Pitch 25 in Edo. So we'll be there from 2 to 6. So come on and hang out with us. And speaking of the Astros, before we get into yesterday's game where they were unable to close the door in the West, a lot of people got themselves, including Tyler Milner, upset about Jeremy Pena, but we'll get to that in just a second. This was Joe Espada giving us an update on the great Yordan Alvarez, who was going to get more imaging on that knee. This is him talking about his all-world hitter.
Right knee sprained. He will not be available for this series. If there's a chance for him to come back, the regular season, it's good news. It's just I wish he would have been, I hope it would have been just one game, but that's not the case.
All right, yeah. As you hear there, it's at least the series. They aren't closing the door completely on him not being able to come back during the regular season, but a sprained knee, Clint, and they're going to need him to be at his best coming up in the when the postseason begins, as it looks like they will get there. But that is the latest there on Yordan Alvarez, and hopefully, Clint, he is in a good enough place that he'll be ready to go by the postseason.
Yeah, look, I mean, if it were postseason, I think he'd play. I mean, a sprained knee, especially a guy that could play, that could be a DH, right? I mean, this may clear things up for Joe Espada on how the hell he handles that DH role for a while. But yeah, look, I don't like him stretching singles into doubles. I don't like him taking added risk. I'm thankful that that's just a sprained knee and not something worse. And so getting the rest that he needs, that way he feels loved like Bregman does and like Tucker got all that downtime, that little injury he had. Get him good and loved up and get him back on the baseball field and let's ride. He'll be fine.
Yeah. He's kind of got this – he's kind of got this Tua deal to him where like he just watched things that don't look like they supposed to be big things. Like when you look at that – Clint, how many times have we seen people do that? Come up with a sprained knee. Right? Like, yeah. There is nothing about what he did going into second base that screams, he's going to have that could result in a sprained knee. Just like the hit that took Tua out didn't look like a hit that would have somebody in the space that Tua was in. But obviously, you have the concussions, and obviously you have the knee issues that he's had before and all that weight. It is just crazy. When you looked at that, like, when he got up, you're thinking, damn, what the hell happened? Watched the replay multiple times and still couldn't solve or see where he got this sprained right knee. But hopefully this isn't something that lingers and isn't any worse, and he could be ready for the postseason. But looking at last night's game, it was a pitcher's duel until some members of the Astros bullpen got into that damn thing. I mean, it was 1-0. 1-0. When Hunter Brown, who had a really – he was going pitch for pitch with Bryce Miller, who – that big skinny joker right there, he's going 97 and dropping 84. And, like, he was really, really good. I mean, I forgot who the nine-hole hitter was, but he got Altuve and somebody back-to-back. In one of those innings, they didn't have a chance. And I'm talking about Altuve, first ballot Hall of Famer. But Hunter Brown did his job. 6 innings. He had 8 strikeouts. So if that was an important number to some out there, hopefully that helped you out. But he had 8 strikeouts and left with 1 run. But that bullpen just couldn't hold it. And the Mariners finally kind of broke that thing open, and they win 6-1. So the most important part is, one, you hope they go ahead and wrap this thing up and end it so now they can kind of put their lineup and put things together, their rotation the way they want to. But the big thing is this dude keeps going. This dude, Hunter Brown, keeps going. And the way he is pitched, you have a obvious advantage in postseason games because it seems like he's 6 innings, 1 run, 7 innings, 2 run. He's like that every night out.
Well, and it couldn't be more timely, man. I mean, with the Verlander situation, you got to have Fromber just keep on keeping on. You got to have Hunter Brown to keep dominating. You got to have Kikuchi to keep doing his thing since he got here. I mean, it's all of these youngsters, starting with Hunter Brown, that are stepping up in a big way. Boy, the Astros have never needed it more with this Verlander situation. So not only are they killing it, but they're doing it at the perfect time.
Yeah, big for them. Hayward with a homer yesterday, the only run there. The lineup is out against Logan Gilbert, who is one of their better pitchers, I believe was an all-star this year. Altuve will lead off. Tucker is in that 2 spot. Yes. Bregman is batting third. Diaz behind him, and he's catching. Singleton is the DH tonight. Caratini is at first. And Jeremy Pena is the shortstop with Hayward in the outfield and Dubon as well in center. So Jake gets the night off. And maybe I'm nitpicking here, but this one I just wonder about. Maybe it is something with the thought of getting him some run there because he will play there. It's just weird to me when Singleton and Caratini and Diaz, for that matter, are all in the game together, and they have John as the DH, and they have Caratini as the first baseman. That is odd to me.
Well, it's got the only immediate thing that I think of is that they're doing it because that's how they're going to do it in the postseason.
To me, it's like if John and Caratini are both going to be in the game.
Oh, they're trying to get Caratini that run at first base. That's what they're going to do in the postseason. They want to use the regular season to get Caratini the most reps they can possibly get at first base so that they have more flexibility at first and with that DH.
Got to be. Hopefully, because we've been seeing it later. It's like, when you're the best first baseman is the DH tonight. So hopefully that is where it's going on. But good chance tonight behind Framber Valdez, who has been one of the best pitchers in the second half. Good chance for them to go ahead and close the door on America.
Big 3-3, number 2.
All right, last night, Monday Night Football, there was a doubleheader, Clint, and we've talked a little bit about the Bills and the Jags, the next two opponents for the Texans, and we'll get back to that. But last night was maybe the coming out party for Jaden Daniels.
Ooh.
He was something special. I'm seeing highlights right now on the TV. I mean, what was he, 91% completion?
21 of 23.
That's a record in terms of completion percentage for a rookie in the NFL. And he didn't, and it wasn't just like little throws, Clint. He was making throws down the field. He was making plays. He revitalized Zach Ertz's career, it seemed like, last night on the field. And he looked special last night. They win 38-33. Now the Bengals, Clint, are 0-3 after losing two home games to the Commanders and the Patriots to kick things off. But Jaden Daniels is the story, as you said, 21 of 23, 250 yards, 2 touchdowns in the air, and 1 with his legs as well. He was special last night.
He was big-time special, and we can't have this conversation without tipping the cap to Cliff Kingsbury as well, man. I mean, a lot of people question that hire in Washington is in terms of the offensive coordinator, and he is lights out with Jaden Daniels to this point. And they are, you know, as you said, they are. Last night was just, they were fearless, man. The dagger dropping the old Russell Wilson raindrop, just throws the fade, barely gets the ball off because the play clock's going down. Really just need to milk the clock here and you know, get some points to make it a 2-score game. And he throws the raindrop go route down the sideline to McLaurin and just drops it on the bucket. I mean, that in the bucket, that was one of those moments too where everything was kind of chaotic. He had yelled at the sideline a couple times, give me the play in, give me the play in, give me the play in. And I think everybody on the sideline was like, hey, man, chill out. We're trying to run the clock down is what we're trying to do. But, hell, he wanted to go. He wanted to go, and he ends up dropping that dime on Terry McLaurin. He was special last night. It is unbelievably impressive.
Like, you don't want to make just crazy predictions, but I'm not saying I know how good the kid's going to be. I'm not saying that this dude's going to bring a championship to Washington. But what you're watching, it is hard to see a space where, like, he doesn't work. You know what I mean? Like, hey, man, this was just a fortunate start. It started good, but then it's going to go down.
Convincing.
It's hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was that way with CJ the first several years. It's hard to see. I don't know how good he's going to be, but it's hard not to see, like, hey, man, this guy going to be a starter in the league. It's hard not to see he'll be Trevor or he'll be, something like that.
Yeah.
Even though it's just been three games, it just looks like he's calm. It seems like he is picking the game up already this quick.
Yeah.
55 starts in college probably doesn't hurt that either when you look at a guy like Anthony Richardson who's got like 13 since high school. It's hard to not seeing him not work.
Well, Ron, it's hard for me right now to look at this football team and tell me they can't threaten for the NFC East.
Right now.
Yeah. I mean, that Dan Quinn's defense, look at the numbers. I can't remember all the numbers they threw out there last night, but Dan Quinn's defense is going to give him a chance to win games. And that kid and Cliff Kingsbury are on one right now. That offense is playing really, really good football. They got some dudes, and he is fully in charge of what the hell's going on, mature beyond his years. Like you said, may have something to do with how many games he started, how much football he's played. But that is, I'm going to tell you, in the NFC East, that's the most impressive team we've seen consistently.
Well, they haven't punted in two games.
That's some Cliff Kingsbury air raid.
He's a rookie. They haven't punted.
Yeah.
They haven't punted, and they keep scoring. Like, now, they were all field goals against the Giants, but they won it, but they haven't punted in two games. So, good for him. And as I said, man, the Bills to me look like, I'm not saying they're the best team, but they have clearly easily been the most impressive team. Nobody has looked better. You can say how you want to feel. They just beat the brakes off of two teams that people coming into the year thought were teams that could be playoff level to the Dolphins. And, obviously Tua did play in that game before he got injured, but the Dolphins and the Jags, they just beat the hell out of
them. Big 3-3, number 3.
All right, Clint. Steve Sarkisian. And that Quinn Ewers is questionable for Texas SEC debut against Mississippi State. Not sure if he is going to be able to make it and be ready in the lineup. And Sark said he was encouraged by the performance of Arch Manning, who made his first career start in the Longhorns' 51-3 victory. Manning completed 15 of 29 passes for 258, two touchdowns, and two interceptions. Said, I've seen a lot of young quarterbacks have a rough start, and then that rough start turns into a rough game. Sark said that about the turnovers, it was a little bit rough for the start from him, but I thought he rebounded and did some nice things. Just saying, Clint, looks like here. Oh, we don't know if Clint's going to be ready to go.
Yeah.
We might get another one out of Arch.
Look, this is a head coach. They're not going to play. If Quinn's not 100% healthy, they're not going to play him against Mississippi State. That's Sarkisian saying, I feel like I can go.
Hell, Florida beat the brakes off of Mississippi State.
That's something to say. Like, Mississippi State is damn near as bad. I don't know. I mean, look, I don't know if they're as bad, but they're damn near as bad as a couple of these lower level teams that they've had to play right now. So, come on, man. I think that's just Sark playing his cards the right way.
Yeah. And listen, I said Friday, like, there's a chance that Sark could have some decisions to make if he plays a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this was the game for Arch, right? Like, 15 of 29, he had turned the ball over twice against UL Monroe.
Yep.
This was not like, he was good. I mean, they won 51-3 and he still made plays, but this was not a game where you were like, whoa. The first game you were like, whoa.
Yeah.
He didn't back it up with another, I'm going to stop.
No, keep going. Do it again. Do it again one more time. Like, whoa.
He didn't back it up like that. It was a fine game,
yeah.
But this wasn't a game to me to oust a guy who led you to a college football playoff.
It ain't happening, Ron. It ain't happening, man.
Now he may play this week.
He played this week and beat up on Mississippi State. Hell, he should. He should beat up on Mississippi State.
Now, if he does, it might be submission. Now it's an SEC opponent that he has done it against. But 15-29, two touchdowns, two picks against UL Monroe ain't enough to get that job done. All right. Speaking of Josh Allen, and he is the front runner for MVP through 3 weeks. Somebody on this show picked him to be the MVP, but he is the front runner for MVP. He leads damn near in many quarterback categories. But wait till he had something to say. Now, some people say that I tend to stoke things,
stir the pot a bit,
kick
the ant bed
things a little bit, but I feel like this is a message he was delivering to Stephon Diggs. Now, you can listen to this and be the judge and think I'm trying to make something out of nothing, but you'll hear it for yourself coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Would you and the people, would you all agree Josh Allen is in the clubhouse just through 3 weeks, probably the MVP right now? With how the Bills have played, how that offense has played, and what he's done, you know, as you would say, a lot of people believe he's doing more with less, and that always adds to it. I would think that Josh is probably kind of in the clubhouse right now as the MVP.
Absolutely, and rightfully so, along with, Ron, like, let's be honest, the story behind this of shifting gears mid-season last year, at the end of the season, one of the best, most targeted receivers in the NFL over the last 4 or 5 years, had a ton of success with you, Stephon Diggs, you let him walk. A lot of folks thought, boy, well, what's Buffalo going to do? Particularly on the offensive side of the football, because not only did Diggs leave, hell, to get the cat on the other side of the ball left for him too.
Yeah, a whole host of defensive.
But no, what? No, I'm talking about the other receiver.
Oh yeah,
that's in Davis. Hell, yeah,
he's in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, yeah. So I mean, he lost his top two guys, Gabe Davis. He lost his top two guys, and really all that was left was his running back that he had some success with in the second half of the season, and his tight end that they had drafted. I guess two tight ends, but one of them that they had drafted out of Utah. And the story is, boy, when you think they were going to take a huge step back, all of a sudden this dude's playing a different brand of ball, and he's doing it as well through three games as anybody in the league. So, yeah, I think the production, the box scores, the game film, along with the story and expectations or the lack thereof, I think is made for MVP conversation.
Yeah. I like Poyer on the other side of the ball. And Tre'Davious White, sorry about that. And Matt Milano, he's been out. He's been injured. They didn't lose him or trade him or anything, but he's been out. So perception is that the defense is worse. He's got to be in the driver's seat through 3 weeks right now. And with that, I'm kind of listening around. And I just, you all be the judge. You tell me, I'll accept. And that's from you all out there listening on the YouTube and Twitch and text line and Clinton Tyler as well. I heard this and it was hard for me not to think, like, I don't know if he meant it, but this feels like a Stephon Diggs dig, pun intended. And I wonder if Stephon Diggs takes it this way and if you would take it this way. This is Josh Allen post game talking about where this offense is, where this team is, and why they're off to such a hot start.
Fun and wonderful thing when you had a bunch of guys that don't care about the stats, they don't care about the touchdowns. And again, I think throughout practice, we've just had this mindset of like, hey, let's just do things the right way and find ways to win football games. That's what we're doing right now.
I know that I've been known to stir a pot.
100% he was talking
right,
to
like, I, like, even if he wasn't, like, if I'm Stephon Diggs, I mean, he hit all of them. He hit the we got guys that don't care about the stats.
They're so unselfish.
Don't care how many touchdowns they get. He even took it to practice.
We got team guys.
We get in here. Everybody, like, yeah, that felt like, hey, and when he said he straight faced.
Oh, yeah.
Straight face. Like, I mean, the way he sounds, like, thank God, we got that dude up out of here, man. My life was hell having to deal with him.
That's passive aggressive 101.
Well, I'm having to walk around here on eggshells. All right, man, I gotta make sure. Do I gotta feed him? That's what it's. Now I may be overdoing it. I've done that before. But that if I'm Stephon Diggs, I'm sure taking it that way. And I'm hot about it because I didn't kiss your ass all off season, to be honest. I talked about how good you've been.
I took the high road all off season.
All off season.
Hey, Josh knows what he was doing.
Let me hear that one more time. Let me hear Josh one more time to make sure, because I heard it. I said, damn. Hell, who that? He ain't talking about Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis didn't talk. He ain't talking about Mitchell Morse, the center. I mean, when you say something like this, this means to me that you didn't have this all previously. This one more time, let me hear.
Fun and wonderful thing when you had a bunch of guys that don't care about the stats, they don't care about the touchdowns. And again, I think throughout practice, we've just had this mindset of like, hey, let's just do things the right way and find ways to win football games. That's what we're doing right now.
Do things the right way. Champ on YouTube and Twitch said, definitely I'm overdoing it. Okay. I don't know, boy.
It feels like a very passive-aggressive, very hidden message. Hey, I'm going to put this out there. Maybe he'll see it type of thing.
I just know Josh is smart enough to know exactly when he says that, where that's going.
Yeah, I don't think that in his mind he was like, I'm going to take this shot at Diggs. But I do think he's probably – it's refreshing to not have that situation at practice. And in speaking about it, you can't help but think that it's about Diggs. You can't help but – even if you're not talking about him directly – you can't help but think the atmosphere that was last year and the guy that was the most targeted until mid-year last year and then left the system was Stephon Diggs. It's hard to not think that whether he was talking about the situation or Diggs specifically, which I don't think he was talking about Diggs specifically like in his mind, but indirectly it's damn sure about Diggs and what had been going on in Buffalo before.
Do you think Diggs responds to this at all?
I think he'll be asked about it.
I hope not.
This feels like,
just keep doing what you're doing, Stephon.
This feels like something he might respond to. Champ said he's more with you, Clint. That makes more sense. I'm just saying, Josh Allen has been in the league for a long time. Josh Allen had to go to the media damn near every day and talk about all of this silliness with Diggs and understands any kind of words or any kind of looks or any kind of body language could be taken some kind of way. And then after their 3-0 start, he stepped out to say that. Like a guy.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, look, he's not. I mean,
I'm not. I mean,
it's. I don't blame him. Like I don't. There's nothing worse than, I've said this before. Whether it's directly about Stephon Diggs or it's indirectly about like what the coaches had, an offensive coordinator had allowed to happen in Buffalo. There's nothing worse. And what Buffalo proved was that it doesn't matter how talented you are, you just simply can't win with that mindset. And the mindset I'm talking about is dropping back and trying to. No matter what the defense throws at you, trying to throw the football to one person and feeling like an offensive coordinator that doesn't have just an open mind of I can call any play under the sun right now and my guys are going to do their damnedest to execute it with no kind of pushback. Like if you don't have that, if in any way, shape, or form you've got the mindset going into a game is like, man, I got to get this guy the ball or all hell's going to break loose. I've got to get this guy the ball. To blow these stats up or whatever reason, even if it's innocently, I got to get this guy the ball because it gives me the best chance to win ball games. Like if that's your mindset going in and you have those kind of blinders on, you're just not going to win. Doesn't matter how good you are. Josh Allen's got the biggest, strongest arm in the game. And nobody was more targeted over the last handful of years than Diggs, and it still didn't work. So I think he's talking more about the situation, the reality that was Buffalo, that just happens to indirectly be including Stephon Diggs.
Yeah. I'm sure Steph took it that way. I'm sure Diggs took it that way. I think Gabe Davis might have cussed him out to himself. Said that the crib. All right. Something else with Diggs there that I think a narrative that's been built that I think it's time to kind of close the door on as well. And looking at the entirety of the AFC now. Do you view the Texans differently? Now we've seen 3 weeks. We've seen the entirety of the AFC. We saw what the Bengals did last night. We saw what the Jags did last night. Do you believe the place of the Texans has changed in the AFC now 3 weeks in? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Promise you we will quickly get to where the Diggs narrative is and where the Texans sit in the AFC after 3 weeks. But want to give a congratulations. He's a teammate, right? Andre Ware.
Hell
who
yeah.
You hear, it's definitely one of Clint as they do the, as you follow Andre Ware after every single game that the Texans play. Andre Ware, amongst everything, Heisman Trophy winner, played for the Houston Cougars, played in the NFL as well.
Wow.
And obviously calls Texans games every week with Mark Vandermeer. Congratulations to Andre. He is going to be a part of the 2025 Houston Sports Hall of Fame class. So congratulations to Andre Ware. They should get Tunsil up there to flinch. Getting a stance to flinch. right as he goes to accept.
Wow.
The Lord goes to speak so he can hit Andre. So Andre can hit him with that hit, what he hit him with Sunday. Andre, boy, was smoking. Like, just have Laramie up there in a stance, and then let Andre hit him with this.
False start. Offense, number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first down.
He got it out of the way early. Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week, though. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
He's amped, ain't he?
If he would have given us, it's every week with this guy. That's what I was hoping he would say, with this guy. It's every week. You're a Pro Bowl. It's the, God, what did he throw?
I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse.
What did Andre throw? God, I want to know.
Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week, though.
But congratulations to Andre Ware. It's a cool thing. We've been able to see these a lot as Bagwell, Biggio. We've watched Andre Johnson go in. We've watched countless people go in to the Hall of Fame. Cheryl Swoops, Roger Clemens went in that 22s class with Clyde Drexler. So congratulations to him as well, as a great honor, as well deserved. All right, we were talking about Diggs a little bit ago. Can we cut this narrative? Can we all agree, the people as well, because many of you all have tried to send this in a lot. Can we cut the? Is it official that we can cut the Stephon Diggs made Josh Allen thing?
I ain't never subscribed to that.
I know yet, but you know what I mean. People did. Like, there'll be times that rolled across. Oh yeah, Josh Allen ain't gonna be nothing this year. Stephon Diggs, man, what was it before Diggs? What was it? We'll see what he is after. Can we at least get with that? Like, Stephon Diggs, a great player, and Stephon Diggs absolutely did help Josh Allen and got him in the right, but he ain't make Josh Allen. Like, Stephon Diggs wasn't only reason. It wasn't going to be like, hey, Josh Allen, a top five MVP candidate, he loses Diggs, and now he becomes
No, I mean, look, if we're being completely honest, I've never subscribed to that, to be honest with you, but if anything, it's flip, right? I mean, Josh Allen made Diggs. I mean, you want to talk about when Diggs, now he had some good years in Minnesota, obviously, but you want to talk about when Diggs really arrived and became all pro and became a guy that led the league in targets. And I mean, Josh Allen's willingness to continually try to drive the football into coverage, no matter what coverage was back there, for Stephon Diggs. If anything, the reality of that situation is Josh Allen made Diggs. The reality is Josh Allen, you can argue, made Gabe Davis, throwing the football, driving the football down the field, giving him opportunities with his big body and giving him opportunity after opportunity after opportunity with that aggressive style that they played for a good chunk of while Josh Allen has been in Buffalo. So yeah, no, I think at the very, I mean, by now, hell yeah, I mean, I would think some folks would want to put that to bed.
We could end that one because that one's a strong one. I mean, there were national people who were saying stuff like that or pushing towards that. No, he's last night. That meant hit 10 different receivers, and they have been rolling. So both of them are great players. Both of them will make the people around them better, but both of them, Diggs and Allen, aren't made by somebody. That's I don't think that's fair to either one of them. All right. Prior to the season, I think many people had the Texans. I don't know anybody in terms of the AFC. I don't know anybody that had that didn't have the Texans as a top five team in the AFC. As we've talked about it, Vegas had them behind the Chiefs and tied with the Ravens in terms of odds, best odds during the offseason to get out of the AFC. And as we sit and look at it now, Clint, there are three teams that are unbeaten: the Steelers, the Bills, who got to 3-0 last night, and then the Chiefs. And then there are other teams that are in the same boat as the Texans at a 2-1 record. The Texans, obviously, your Jets, the Chargers as well, they're 2-1. And then, you know, there are some prizes, some surprises, like the Ravens down at 1-2, the Bengals down at 0-3 with losses to the Patriots and the Commanders. Where do you now see, in terms of, we're now 3 weeks into the season, 713-572-4610. Those of you can jump in on this. I just saw someone text in. I got them fourth now. Where do you see the Texans now that you've seen 3 weeks of them? Where do you put them in the hierarchy in the AFC?
Man, that is a tough question, Ron. Because I think the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Jets are ahead of them. I think when you get beyond those three teams.
I just can't put the Steelers over them yet.
I'm with you. Like the Steelers are.
That's getting better, Clint.
No, it's getting better, and they're dangerous. But again, we got to look at who these teams have played. The Steelers have beaten the Chargers, the Falcons, and the Broncos. Again, it's been in that fashion of defense and not turning the ball over. And while there's something to be said for that, it's not Super Bowl caliber. Like, they're going to have to get a lot more out of their quarterback, which is trending in that direction. They're going to have to get a lot more out of their quarterback to be in the same conversation with the Bills.
He took more chances against the Chargers.
Yeah, and he did. But so here's where I'd go. I'd go Buffalo, Kansas City, and New York. I would put them as the top three teams in the AFC. And then there's a big group of teams that we just, whether they've played above their head, the Pittsburgh Steelers, or they've played below, which I would think the Texans are in that conversation. I think you've got the Steelers, the Chargers, the Texans.
I still got the Ravens in that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're correct.
They're 1-2, Clint.
No. I take that back. The Ravens are in there with Kansas City and Buffalo.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Raiders loss at home was.
It hurts. No, I get it. But there's just certain teams that just that have earned the stripes. They got the pelts on the wall. The Baltimore Ravens for me are in that conversation. They've not done enough to fall out of.
You have them in there with Kansas City.
Yes, it would be four: the Jets, the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Baltimore Ravens. I have as your top four AFC teams, and then you've got teams that are on the rise, that have new coaches that have played above board, maybe exceeded expectations. You got some that haven't. That they're in that, I don't know enough about them yet. The Steelers and the Texans are one of those. The Chargers are one of those teams, no doubt about it. I think the Dolphins would be, but you lose Tua, and right now you can't put them in the conversation.
You don't know when he's going to come
back. So, yeah, I look at the Texans are in that second tier of AFC team right now for me.
Second tier. That's a good way to put it. Second tier. So you have, I would have those four. The Chargers – and someone just texted in, Clint, the Jets haven't earned anything. They didn't say anything.
You don't think the Jets ain't earned nothing?
When I came out of the darkness.
They said ish. Yeah, I mean, their two wins against
the. Their two wins are they've lost to the 49ers in San Francisco. They've got one of the better defenses. They've got one of the better quarterbacks in the game. I believe in them. But yeah, their two wins aren't much. I mean, that's fair. I think it's fair. Patriots and Titans.
Yeah. So I would probably have the Jets more. I would have the Jets in the Pittsburgh Chargers range of I don't know. I don't know about him. If Herbert wasn't hurt, and Herbert might miss some time, they're thinking potentially high ankle sprain
yep.
for Herbert. And Joey Bosa has already had his annual lower leg injury that he has every single year. He is going to miss some time. Derwin James just got suspended a game as well. So that's not long term. But the Herbert thing, I believe their coach, a lot of it was wacky and as weird as Jim is. I believe their coach and his success level. So I would believe a little bit more of them if Herbert wasn't injured. But the injury to Herbert could potentially be an issue. But like, yeah, I would have Kansas. To me, Kansas City and Buffalo have separated themselves. I believe in the Ravens, but I just can't. I just can't walk off and make, you just let Gardner Minshew just walk in for the second straight year. He did it with the Colts last year, where they walked into Baltimore and beat them in week two. You just let them and the Raiders. And then the Raiders turned around and got their asses handed to them by the Panthers, who didn't look like a football team the previous couple of weeks. So I would bring them differently. But I would have the Ravens. Like, the Texans got to beat the Ravens for me. Like, that's just a team that...
The Texans have to beat the Ravens?
For me to have the Texans to jump the Ravens, like, to me, for me to feel like the Texans are a better football team than the Ravens, I got to see them on the field beat them.
After losing twice last year.
It's just a matchup where I look like that's almost the Texans, like, hump that they got
to
get over.
To me, when you, as a Texans fan, to me, when I, like, watching the Texans over the last 5 years, I go back to the COVID year when, I said this before, when Baltimore came in here with nobody in the stands us. Yeah. It seems like since then, they've been toying with us. It seems like since then, they've just kind of been tiptoeing through the tulips and almost knowing after the game, we're going to laugh, we're going to come over, we're going to shake hands. And it's been that way every time. Seemingly every time we come up against the Baltimore Ravens, it's borderline disrespectful at this point in time. So I agree with you. That is a huge hurdle for the Houston Texans. I don't know if it so much is for the team as it is for my ass, but I know it is for me.
The Ravens could be 1-3 right now. I just like there we see and know what their ceiling is. Someone just texted in, did we watch the Falcons versus Chiefs game? They almost lost. I'll just say this, and you can take this however you want to take it. The Chiefs are just in a different level in terms of what their regular season games look like. You clearly know that they turn and flip a switch, and that they're like the kid who just takes just well enough and does his work just well enough until the big test
makes
comes.
Just good enough grades to stay on the football field.
Until the big test comes. And then their ACT, and then they're like, what the hell?
Until the final comes and to graduate 10th grade, they need to make an 80 on that final.
Yeah,
knock a 95 out.
Yeah, and you know what? So like, I just think they're in a different case. I mean, they lost to the Raiders on Christmas Day, and they didn't give up a pass completion after the first quarter, and then they won the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I think the Chiefs are just kind of in a different space if they play close games with him. All right, what you got coming up in the fourth?
All right, I got a Laramie Tunsil would you rather. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to tell you what it is when we come back, and I want everybody out there to get involved. 713-572-4610. I don't want to get too far away from this awful game that Laramie Tunsil played to circle us back to the penalty issue that is Laramie Tunsil. But I got a would you rather. A lot of folks out there wanted him benched. A lot of folks out there are maybe just making excuses. We will. I'll give you a would you rather, and I want to hear from you. 713-572-4610. We'll do that next right here on Sports Radio 610.